This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
As a business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
A record-breaking whiteout. Good morning, I'm Jennifer Kashinka, in for Gordon Deal along with Rasa Kay on this Wednesday, December 27th. Here's what we have for you this hour.
Snow continues to fall in Erie, Pennsylvania and surrounding areas that have already seen a record amount of snow over the past few days.
New York, San Francisco and Philadelphia have filed a federal lawsuit against the Defense Department, arguing that many service members who are disqualified from gun ownership weren't reported to the National Background Check System.
A drawing to decide who wins a seat in the Virginia legislature has been put off.
2017 was a big year for hackers. What's ahead in 2018?
Cyber criminals have realized in 2017 that not only is cybercrime big business, it's going to finish at about $8 billion, but it's basically a risk-free crime because there are no international laws. So we're just going to see these attacks just increase tremendously. And from my perspective, it's going to be a scary, scary year.
Eric Hole of Secure Anchor Consulting will be along in about 20 minutes with that story. A holiday storm has blanketed the lakefront city of Erie, Pennsylvania in more than 5 feet of snow this week, burying streets and driveways in mountains of powder and ice, forcing residents to abandon their cars and shattering several snowfall records. The National Weather Service says the storm had dumped about 63 inches of snow on the area between Sunday evening and last evening. 63 has fallen since Saturday, more on the way. This woman's husband owns a snow removal business.
They left at 1 a.m. on Christmas Eve, and they came back at 12:30 Christmas Day and left again by Christmas afternoon, and they're not back yet.
Jill Harvey is a spokeswoman for PennDOT, which includes Erie County.
We've brought in additional resources to that area in order to keep up with the snow as much as possible and try to get those lanes safe and passable for our traffic that is out.
The snow is part of what's called a lake effect snowstorm. Such storms occur when very cold air comes over the relatively warm waters of the Great Lakes. Heat and moisture then rise into the cold air to produce snow. The direction of the wind determines where that snow falls. In this case, the snow band parked itself over Erie about 100 miles northeast of Cleveland. Three major cities have filed a lawsuit against the Defense Department for its failure to report many criminal convictions in the military justice system to the FBI and its National Gun Background Check Database. The Pentagon has for years run afoul of federal laws intended to keep guns out of the hands of felons and domestic abusers by not transmitting to the FBI the names of service members convicted of crimes that disqualify gun ownership. That's what allowed Devin Kelly, who was convicted of domestic assault in the Air Force, to buy the rifle at a store that he used to kill 25 people at a Texas church in November. Now, after two decades of serious lapses, officials from New York, Philadelphia, and San Francisco are trying to force a change. Their suit would require the Pentagon to submit to federal court monitoring of its compliance with reporting laws. The cities say having a federal court oversee compliance would reduce the chance that a tragedy like the massacre in Sutherland Springs, Texas, happens again. In the Virginia House of Delegates, it was a tie, and the saga has taken another twist, as a drawing set for this morning was unexpectedly postponed. Valerie Borline of the Wall Street Journal has more on this story and is here now. Valerie, is drawing lots a common practice for deciding electoral ties?
I was surprised to find that many, many states have this law that if an election is a tie, especially after a recount, it'll be decided by drawing lots rather than having another election. And in Virginia, what that means is that they take those old little film canisters, like Kodak canisters, the little black plastic ones, they put each person's name in a canister, put it in a bowl, and then someone draws out the canister, and that person is the winner. But it varies state to state. Some states draw Scrabble tiles, either A or Z, and some states, literally throw dice. It can depend state to state.
Valerie, why isn't there a revote?
That's a great question. And there isn't a revote at this point because election officials and political scientists agree on this, actually, that a revote, it changes the dynamics considerably from where they were on election day. The stakes are higher. Everyone knows there's a lot of attention. You get a different electorate that comes out. You get a lot of, potentially in this case, this is the race that will decide whether Democrats are tied with Republicans in Virginia or whether Republicans maintain control of the House. And in Virginia, that will mean, do they, you know, what happens with Obamacare? What happens with a number of important legislative issues? There'll be a lot of outside money that comes in. So for a lot of reasons, and expense is another one, a revote is just not often the option that carries the day.
We're speaking with Valerie Borlein of the Wall Street Journal. So Valerie, there is an awful lot at stake in this particular election.
There is an awful lot at stake in this election, and Democrats have found themselves surprised to be this close to parity. The Democrat won the governor's race there, so they feel like they have the momentum, and there's an awful lot of attention and expectation around this race.
Will this be the end of it if they have this drawing and somebody is finally declared the winner?
No, the Republicans and Democrats there both say, look, we don't think this is the end. The law states that the person that loses the drawing of the lot has a chance to request another recount. And that almost certainly will happen. And there have been enough legal turns and twists here that it's likely there'll be some sort of court filing and lawsuit over this case. So we're probably several weeks, if not months, from an outcome in this particular race.
So can the loser continue to drag out the process so that someone is at a political disadvantage?
That's a possibility. I think that the issue is that both sides feel like they have a valid argument over improprieties or questionable decisions made about the way this election has been counted. And most specifically, there was one ballot in question that a three-judge panel last week said, hey, this ballot should have been counted for the Republican, and it wasn't counted for either because the voter had circled or had kind of filled in the circles under both candidates' names. So there will almost certainly be additional question over that. I don't know that's a partisan issue so much as I think both of them feel like they have a good legal ground to challenge the outcome, whatever it is.
We were talking about the story on air last week, and it seems so unusual that in a vote that there are thousands and thousands of ballots cast that you actually have a tie. We've heard of this situation before, but it's usually a smaller race where there are dozens or maybe a couple hundred. Does this happen very often?
It's a great question. It really does not happen very often on this level because there were more than 23,000 votes counted in this election. And it makes sense that if you have a little town where there's, you know, 200 votes, 400 votes, the tie is much more likely and happens often, relatively often, at least a couple times a year. But on the legislative level, it almost never happens. And on the congressional level, it's decades since this has happened.
Valerie Borlein of the Wall Street Journal. The Virginia State Board of Elections announced yesterday it would delay the drawing of lots today after receiving a letter from lawyers for the Democratic candidate that she was legally fighting the ruling of the recount last week. Jennifer Kishinka in for Gordon Deal along with Rasa Kay. Thanks for spending part of your morning with us. California's costliest wildfire season on record has sent air quality plummeting in highly populated urban areas and pumped massive quantities of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases into the air. That's presenting a challenge for public health officials and regulators who seek to limit air pollution in California. This morning's Dave Duncan has more.
On certain days in California, even using fireplaces, wood stoves, and outdoor fire pits is illegal. In Southern California, the Thomas Fire, the largest wildfire in the state's history, has been burning through Ventura and Santa Barbara counties for 3 weeks. Just 2 months ago, blazes ripped through Northern California's wine country. During those October wildfires, air quality in San Francisco was comparable to that in Beijing. This month, air quality in some Santa Barbara and Ventura County communities hit record-high hazardous levels, making it unsafe for anyone to be outside. The public health and environmental threats are a challenge for a state that considers itself a global leader on climate change and has strict air quality management policies. Jen?
Thanks, Dave. It's 19 minutes after the hour. Rasa Kay is here with more today's top stories.
Well, Jen, teeth-chattering cold and disastrously snowy roads in some parts of the Northeast. Some 5 feet of snow has fallen in Erie, Pennsylvania since Christmas Eve, and its airport is seeing only a few flights as well as all that lake effect snow gets moved with more sifting down. Snow warnings are posted through this afternoon with officials asking residents to stay home and off the roads. Jill Harvey is with PennDOT.
Give us space to do our job, so don't be trying to pass a plow truck or get in between two plow trucks that may be plowing side by side.
Well, the deepening cold forecast this week is across the northern tier of the U.S. and is mobilizing municipalities and nonprofits in advance. Hours at public spaces such as libraries and school buildings are being extended for use as warming centers. And towing companies are working flat out on flat tires and also on battery jumps. New York City, San Francisco, and Philadelphia have filed a federal lawsuit against the Department of Defense, arguing that a flawed background check system has allowed military members to get guns when they should have been barred. The suit seeks an injunction and judicial oversight to ensure the department is updating the federal database. A multi-state lawsuit has been dropped on the Environmental Protection Agency. Attorneys general from eight East Coast states want to ensure the EPA will make upwind states like those in the Midwestern Rust Belt control their own pollution so it doesn't waft into those in the Mid-Atlantic and New England. Four Ohio teenagers will face additional charges following the death of a 22-year-old man who was struck by a sandbag they are accused of throwing from an overpass in Toledo. Marquise Bird of Detroit was a passenger in the front seat of his friend's vehicle on December 19th when a sandbag went through the windshield. The suspects, all aged 13 and 14, were originally charged with felonious assault. They are now charged with murder. It's official, and it's no longer a joke. Video game addiction is a mental health disorder. The World Health Organization plans to include gaming disorder in its disease diagnostic manual in 2018. That means it will officially become a health condition, a diagnosis that can be used by doctors, other healthcare workers, and insurance companies.
Luckily, that's a mental health disorder I don't suffer from. Do you play video games?
Very, very rarely. Who's got time?
Yeah, I can see this as being an obsessive compulsive disorder, but a mental, is that what they mean by mental health
disorder?
Well,
it says the biggest problem is when it takes precedence over daily life or continues and escalates despite negative consequences. So okay. There you go. Obsessive, right. Yeah, could
okay.
be.
I got it. All right, thanks, Rasa. Jennifer Kashinka in for Gordon Deal, along with Rasa Kay. Well, 2017 was a big year for security breaches, and 2018 is expected to be even worse. Dr. Eric Cole, CEO of Secure Anchor Consulting and author of Online Danger, How to Protect Yourself and Your Loved Ones from the Evil Side of the Internet, is here now with some information on what to expect. Eric, should we be on high alert?
Yes, 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 and yes. Be on high alert. The way I describe it is 2017 was the warm-up. That was the cover band. That was nothing compared to what we're going to see in 2018. And the reason is this. Cyber criminals have realized in 2017 that not only is cybercrime big business, it's going to finish at about $8 billion, but it's basically a risk-free crime because there are no international laws. So we're just going to see these attacks just increase tremendously. And from my perspective, it's going to be a scary, scary year.
What are some of the primary targets going to be?
The primary targets are going to be you, me, and everyone listening. The media tends to focus on the big attacks, your Equifax and your other companies. So we tend to get this false sense of security that that's the main vector. Believe it or not, those are few and far between compared to the attacks that are going on against individuals. So it's you, me, our parents, our grandparents, our kids. And the number one vector is legitimate looking emails with malicious attachments and malicious links. So if there's one skill that you can learn, it's don't trust email and be very careful before you open an attachment or click on a link.
What are hackers using this information for? Are they actually, you know, physically taking this information and doing bad things with it?
Yeah, it depends on the country, but most of the attacks that me and you and individuals have to worry about from the hackers are all financially driven. And a lot of them are coming from Russia, where what they're doing is they're doing identity theft to open up lines of credit in our name. They're doing credit card fraud. They're trying to do fraudulent wire transfers. Most of it is really, really financially driven to cause harm. And then when you bring companies into it and you start bringing in countries like China and North Korea, they're really focused on critical data and information. So any sensitive data, trade secrets, or anything your company has that can give a competitor an unfair advantage, that's going to be the other area they go after.
We're speaking with Eric Cole, CEO of Secure Anchor Consulting. Eric, can you mentioned the fact that there aren't international laws that are coming together on this. Can any of these attacks be stopped?
The damage can be controlled, but they really can't be stopped. And the problem is, to me, the U.S. government is approaching this a little wrong. We're trying to pass all these cyber laws. So the U.S. is trying to say this is illegal and that's illegal. And it's silly because none of these criminals are in the United States. So whether it's legal or not, they don't care. And they're coming from countries in which we don't have extradition treaties. To me, the focus of the government needs to be on regulation, on penalties and fines. This is what you have to do. And if you're not doing it, you can't do business in the United States, or there's going to be very, very big penalties. We have to make this very, very painful for companies that implement poor security. And currently today, like with the Equifax breach, in response to the Equifax breach, two things happened. Equifax got a slap on their hand, and the government gave them a big, juicy contract. To me, that's sending the wrong message, right, to how we should be handling this.
Thanks, Eric. Eric Cole, CEO of Secure Anchor Consulting. If you want more information on how to protect yourself, go to onlinedanger.com. It's 30 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
You don't often find the words business and friendly in the same sentence, let alone the same state. Unless, of course, you're talking about Michigan. Michigan's business-friendly practices help them become a leader in industries that range from agriculture and cybersecurity to aerospace and defense. In fact, Michigan is ranked among the top 10 states for major new and expanded facilities, which makes Michigan more than business-friendly. It makes Michigan business smart. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org.
Give your employees the power to do their best work and maximize this year's budget when you update to new, powerfully performing Dell Business PCs with Intel Core processors. Dell's dedicated small business advisors mean you'll always get the best deal on the right solution for your business. Get up to 35% off select business PCs now until the end of December. Did I mention there's free shipping? Visit Dell.com/small business or call 877-BUY-DELL. That's 877-BUY-DELL.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
It's Wednesday, December 27th. Jennifer Kishinka in for Gordon Deal, along with Rasa Kay. Some of our top stories and headlines. Dreams of a white Christmas have turned into a nightmare in Erie, Pennsylvania, after a storm dumped a record-breaking 5 feet of snow in a 48-hour period. The tiebreaker to settle a dramatic race for a seat in Virginia's House of Delegates has been delayed. The Library of Congress will no longer archive every tweet, something it had been doing since 2010. Swimmer Katie Ledecky has been named the 2017 AP Female Athlete of the Year, beating out tennis star Serena Williams and track athlete Allyson Felix. And if you know something about a 1990 art heist, the FBI wants to hear from you soon. That story in about 20 minutes. Now that tax reform is wrapping up, it looks like infrastructure will be the next big issue on tap for the Trump administration. Chris Gordon of the Wall Street Journal joins us now to talk about prospects for an infrastructure rebuilding plan. Chris, what would President Trump like to see here?
Well, President Trump has proposed $200 billion in direct federal spending, and then $800 billion that the administration says would be done by states, cities, and private companies. So a total of a $1 trillion infrastructure plan.
Do other Republicans go along with that thinking?
I mean, it's hard to tell where the Republican caucus is sometimes, but I think there's some deficit hawk with the $1.5 trillion tax cut. Now they're proposing a $1 trillion infrastructure project. So you could see some deficit hawks like Bob Corker not be so happy. But I think it won't be the Republicans that'll be the main impediment to this. It's going to be getting the Democrats to go along, and there's quite a big gap in the views between the two parties on what an infrastructure project should be.
Chris, why is that? In the past, it seems as though the Democrats did want to support infrastructure reform.
Well, everyone agrees our infrastructure is subpar, but I think this is sort of classic Washington. Everyone agrees there's a problem, but there's just an unwillingness to compromise, and small things get in the way, and that's why Americans are so frustrated with Congress and the federal government in general, because certainly everyone agrees on this plan. It's just a matter of getting it done, which will be a difficult climb.
We're speaking with Chris Gordon of the Wall Street Journal. Chris, how do Democrats think this program would be paid for?
Democrats want essentially all of the $1 trillion to come from the federal government. And they are not happy about the tax cuts that President Trump just signed into law, because it's $1.5 trillion in lost revenue. Now, Republicans say that would be made up by economic growth, but Democrats say, well, you could have used that money and more to rebuild our roads and improve our airports, certainly our rail system. The Democrats want federal spending, and the Republicans mainly want private spending.
Is it realistic, Chris, that private companies will step up to the plate here?
I certainly think some will. The concern, this is expressed by Democrats, is we have a private company build a road, but then they can charge a toll, for example. And so that cost is simply passed on to the citizen. And so private companies certainly are willing to build a road and charge for it. But the question is that in the best interest of the taxpayers?
Chris, when we're talking infrastructure, are we just talking about physical roads and bridges, or does infrastructure encompass more things like networks?
The Trump plan, and we haven't really had a clear Democratic view on exactly what should happen, but the Trump plan is prioritizing a simple infrastructure, roads, bridges. They're prioritizing improving existing roads, projects that can be done quickly. So I think the Trump plan is a more limited view of infrastructure.
And if that money does come through in some shape or form, who decides where it goes? Is that up to different states, or does the federal government have something to say about it?
The federal government certainly has something to say about it. President Trump said the federal government would not give money to states to build something unless, you know, they knew it was happening. It was shovel ready, as they say. And they compare that to, say, the stimulus plan under President Obama, where projects took, you know, are still being done now.
Thanks, Chris. Chris Gordon of the Wall Street Journal. It's 20 minutes before the hour. Jennifer Kishinka in for Gordon Deal this week, along with Ross Akay. How's your 401k doing? Well, if you had one this year, probably pretty good. More from this morning's Gordon Deal.
We're speaking with Alessandra Melito, personal finance writer at MarketWatch, and she's written a piece entitled Trump Asks Americans, How's Your 401k? And here is the answer. All right, so set this up. How did this come about?
So President Trump has been asking lately in campaign rallies and overall how your 401k is doing, and that's likely because of how well the stock market is doing. So we looked at various statistics and studies about 401k plans, how much people are investing, how often they're investing, if they're even participating, or if they're even able to participate.
Wow. What are the numbers, by the way, in terms of companies that offer and employees that participate?
So companies that offer, I like this one report from earlier this year. It was from two U.S. Census Bureau researchers who looked at all W-2 tax forms in the country, and they found that only 14% of all employers, so that's small business as well as like the larger companies,
okay,
have 401k plans for their employees. And it's so low, but of those 14%, most of those are larger companies that are offering 401k. So companies with like 10,000 employees, yeah, or more.
Wow.
Of those, only about a third of the workers who do have access to 401k plans are contributing to those plans.
Wow. And then you could probably drill down on that, right? The ones that are contributing probably aren't contributing enough, leaving money on the table if there's a match, for example.
Yeah. So I don't have the numbers offhand for the match, but I do know that in the past when I've written about this, that a lot of, you know, thousands of dollars are per person are often left on the table when it comes to employer matches. People either just don't know about it or they just can't contribute that much. And it's usually worse for lower income workers than it is for higher income because they are stretching their dollars pretty thin.
What about automatic enrollment? Has that been a help when that rule went into effect, I don't know, what, several years ago?
Yeah, so automatic enrollment is very helpful, and it's actually causing an uptick in the participation rates for plans, according to the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College. Nobel Prize winner Richard Thaler actually talked about this a lot in his research, and because of his push for automatic enrollment and contribution increases, there might have been an additional $29.6 billion added to retirement accounts through the years. It helps that companies they start low, so that's something to consider. Once you actually are enrolled in the plan, you should probably up that percentage just because 3%, which is like an average, usually isn't enough for retirement savings in the long run.
Yeah.
But it does get people started at least, which is important.
Alessandro Melito of MarketWatch with this morning's Gordon Deal. It's 13 minutes before the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Jennifer Kishinka in for Gordon Deal along with Rasa Kay. Don't like what you got for Christmas? That's great news for FedEx and UPS. The delivery companies are poised to make even more money as we send back items to retailers and vendors in droves. According to Opturo, a company that specializes in the business of return shipments, we'll return about $90 million worth of goods this holiday season. That's close to a quarter of the total value of goods returned each year, an amount that continues to grow as we increasingly shift to online shopping. Both FedEx and UPS have been trying to capture a bigger share of the returns business as retailers contend with demanding shoppers who want a generous and user-friendly return policy. They're trying to get a bigger slice of the pie for both deliveries and returns by making drop-off locations more convenient. Kohl's earlier this year said it would start accepting returns at its stores for items bought on Amazon. FedEx has pickup and drop-off locations in supermarkets, drugstores, and other locations to better capitalize on the booming business of returns. It's 9 minutes before the hour. Rasa Kay is here with more of today's top stories.
Jen, bitter shots of Arctic air are blasting much of the country. 48 million people are under a wind chill advisory. Across swaths of the upper Midwest, the wind chill makes it feel up to 40 degrees below zero, with the sustained deep freeze forecast to grip the country into the new year. In Erie, Pennsylvania, a state of emergency has been declared over unrelenting lake effect snow that's dumped around 5 feet of it on the city over 2 days. Lori's husband runs a snow removal company southwest of Erie.
They left at 1 a.m. on Christmas Eve, and they came back at 12:30 Christmas Day and left again by Christmas afternoon, and they're not back yet.
In Maine, where they're used to frigid weather, area officials are warning about the dangers of frostbite and ask that people prepare for bone-chilling temperatures that could plummet some 30 degrees below average this week. Three major cities have filed a joint federal lawsuit against the Department of Defense. New York City, San Francisco, and Philadelphia argue that an inadequate background check system has wrongly allowed many military members to buy guns and blames that in part for the mass shooting in Sutherland Springs, Texas, that left 26 people dead in November. Republican Senator Orrin Hatch thanked Utah's most prominent newspaper for naming him Utahn of the Year, a dubious honor at best. The Salt Lake Tribune's scathing editorial urges Hatch not to seek re-election and accuses him of having an utter lack of integrity. The editors take issue with Hatch's support of the GOP tax bill and the dismantling of the state's Bears Ears and Grand Staircase national monuments. Chinese customs data released Tuesday shows it is still abiding by UN trade sanctions imposed earlier this year on North Korea over its ongoing nuclear and missile programs. For the second straight month, China exported no oil products to the isolated country. China is North Korea's main source of fuel. The oldest tree on the White House grounds is coming down. The historic Jackson Magnolia, planted in the 1800s, has been supported with cables for years. It reaches up to the second floor of the executive mansion. But arborists say even that's not enough to save the decaying tree. It will be replaced with offshoots from it that were harvested earlier.
Probably not a bad idea based on all the storms we have these days.
That's right. You know, take down the tree or replace the window later, right?
Yeah, exactly. Thanks, right. Rosa. Well, if you have any information about an art heist in Boston that occurred in 1990, you have only 6 days left to collect a big reward. Just after midnight on March 18th, 1992, thieves dressed as police officers entered Boston's Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum and made off with 13 paintings worth $500 million. Ever since, the mystery has stymied investigators, even as the picture frames remain hanging on the walls of the museum as a reminder of what was taken. In an effort to expedite the recovery of the art, the museum offered a reward of $10 million earlier this year to anyone with information leading to the recovery of the property, which includes art by Rembrandt, Vermeer, and Degas. On January 1st, that reward will drop to $5 million. There have been a few leads over the years, with the FBI claiming that they know the identity of the original thieves, who have allegedly since died. But any effort to discover who possesses the art now has been fruitless. The FBI says its investigation has encompassed many twists and turns, promising leads and dead ends. Investigators say there's no part of the world they haven't scoured, following up on credible leads. That'll do it for this hour. For Rosa Kay, I'm Jennifer Kishinka. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.